children, of course, married, and her daughter.
Oh, yeah, we brought it down there in the memo, yes.
Oh, good heavens.
Good afternoon. We're going to open the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. Today is Tuesday, March 29, 2005. I'm Representative Greg Smith chairing this committee. We're going to be having a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 5072, the Department of Veterans Affairs. Committee, it's my intention with your concurrence to try and move this bill to work session today. For the agenda, what I see us having is perhaps starting off with some invited testimony from Representative Nelson, then moving into the department budget presentation, then moving into invited testimony from Jim Booker of the Oregon Employment Department, and then opening up for public testimony, should we have any. So we have a full agenda today, and again, it's our intention to hopefully work through this entire budget and moving on to full ways and means, if it's the concurrence of the committee. So with that, why don't we first off invite our good representative, Donna Nelson, up. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Chair Smith and distinguished members of this committee, thank you for this opportunity to be here today on behalf of our Department of Veteran Affairs. We have a critical mission today, and one that will impact our veterans for months and years to come. So it's my honor to be here.
Just really quick, just for the record,
I am State Representative Donna Nelson from District 24, also Chairman of the Committee on Veteran Affairs.
Thank you.
And could she talk about that distinguished part a little bit more?
I saw her looking over our shoulder.
Well, I particularly wanted to say how honored I was to be here with two former members of our House of Representatives whom I respect greatly and appreciate, and who are brilliant and have made so much difference in our world, and Senator Verger and Senator Westland. It's my honor to be here before you.
I appreciate you identifying both of them. I knew one of them. I was struggling with the other one. But
I won't ask which one.
I'm not brave enough to say.
Thank you. Traditionally, those who have stepped up and have been there to help our veterans are other veterans. My question today is, who will fight for those who have fought for us? And I must say that this Department of Veteran Affairs is the department that truly fights for those who have fought for us. I have witnessed over the past four decades that it has been those veterans, those who have served, who most readily identify with the needs and the crises in the lives of our veterans. Most recently, when I served as auctioneer to help a beloved colonel who was removed from his home, support rolled in from around the nation, from veterans and their families. One most memorable was the wife of a disabled veteran of Eugene, Oregon, who called to say she wanted to help because for more than a year she had stood on the streets of Eugene with a cup for donations as she tried desperately to save her home. She thought it was the least they could do to offer as much help as possible because she knew what it was like to be in a similar situation. Oregonians, the governor, the legislature, businessmen, educators, medical professionals, and all of us need now to step up, to fight for those who, with commitment and courage, have fought and continue to fight for us. In various hearings of my Veterans Committee, we've had testimony, public and private, that speaks to the situations our military and their families face that make their lives difficult and subject to many perils we civilians rarely have to face. Just today, I read from documents across the nation how situations are impacting those who are returning from Iraq and Afghanistan. We have federal regulations that are supposed to protect our military. However, I had story upon story to share with our various members in our audience and on our committee. For example, when an individual goes to war, there should be a cap on interest they pay on their debt. There's a 6% cap. We have numerous veterans across the nation today whose homes have been foreclosed on, whose cars have been repossessed, because that information has not gotten to the 50,000 judges who rule in our nation. A very critical issue in this Department of Veteran Affairs, communication. Communication of regulations. There are numerous instances like this. Issues regarding medical, dental, mental health needs, homelessness, employment, education and training, monetary matters like home mortgages, taxes and licenses for civilian life responsibilities compound their problems in readjusting to civilian life and society as most of us know it. Critical to their well-being is the knowledge of the vast policies and procedures to progress timely through the complicated system of how to apply and obtain their due medical and disability and death benefits. Add to that their concern for responding to questions regarding their capacity to easily return to their jobs or find jobs without repercussions from being named at-risk soldiers who rightfully will have psychological and physical challenges as they return from war. No individual who goes to war ever comes back unchanged. County Veteran Service Officers, family coordinators, and friends are critical to the VetNet, the statewide support network which can and should lighten the burden of returning servicemen and women and families and also support those aging veterans who find themselves needing a helping hand in augmenting pensions and inadequate benefits. The Oregon Department of Veteran Affairs deserves the highest commendations for helping them handle these missions. We must do more. Oregon Guardsmen and Reservists called up under the Federal Title X Commission recently continue to return in large numbers with other servicemen whose home of record is Oregon. The rest of our Oregon 162nd Infantry of 880 men and women returning to Oregon this month will bring us to a total of 370,000 veterans in our state. If you multiply that by four for a typical size of a family, you know, that's over 1,400,000 individuals needing help, needing support, and walking through the veteran policies and procedures and the bureaucracy that we've established. Oregon soldiers receive from $150 to $700 less for presently unknown reasons from federal and state sources, something we are investigating. You need a department fighting for the rights of these soldiers to receive the same benefits as others. Unemployment has also increased burdens of our veterans. You may know that 40% of those who are returning from Iraq right now, when they were called up, they were unemployed, and they still are. In fact, in our committee today on Veteran Affairs, we had two of those fine soldiers who came into our committee. We were fortunate that the Department of Employment was there and immediately sought to help them. According to the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, 1 million servicemen have been activated, 258,000 now deactivated, 10,000 from the Northwest. This includes 203 catastrophically impacted amputees and 36 blinded, and at this time, we are estimating 40 with severe brain damage. No one goes into combat without being changed. Will we stand by our veterans? Will we fight for those who have fought for us? To do so, we must adequately fund our Department of Veteran Affairs and those dedicated professional individuals who understand the needs. I'm here today to say this budget that is being presented to you for the department is maybe adequate in some light, but let me tell you some deficiencies. We have been funding 0.2 of one full-time county service veteran officer. That is woefully wrong. We must fully fund that position. Those county veteran service officers are near. They are close to the homes and the families of our veterans. They are essential. They are essential in what we call the vet net, the vet network that coordinates with this Department of Veteran Affairs. Although this full funding is not in the budget, we will be asking for that amount to be included before we finalize this budget. Also, I must say, upon my recent visit to the Oregon Veterans Home in the Dalles, something you would be so proud of, something that would not be a part of the good we can do for our veterans had not that county stepped up and helped fund that beautiful home. But we have been very neglectful. It desperately needs some $300,000 of repairs and refurbishment and upgrading of equipment. The reason that I mention these things to you is that these are not included in this budget. Also, we have situations such as the Veterans Emergency Relief Fund that, thanks to the veterans primarily who have contributed, needs to be a part of our checkoff list on our income tax forms. But also, we need to provide some what I call gap funding. From the time an individual applies for benefits or for a job or applies for a mortgage, we have expenses that these veterans had not anticipated. And unfortunately, as may be, we often have a death of a veteran, and that widow needs help and needs interim help. We're going to be asking for funding of $1 million for that fund. There are tremendous expenses that are not taken care of, but we need the help in bridging the gap. These individuals deserve our support, and I'm asking you for that support today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions of the representatives?
Well, just a comment, Mr. Chair, and actually more of a compliment than a comment. Don, I can't tell you how much all of us up here and veterans behind you and all over the state appreciate the noble work that you continue to do so passionately and enthusiastically. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, Chair Nelson, we would like to invite you up, if your time would allow, to come up and sit up here with us as we go through this budget. I think all of us would benefit from your leadership on this issue.
Thank you. I'd be honored.
Thank you. With that, we're going to move into the department budget presentation, and we're going to ask Mr. Willis to come on up and any other folks you'd like to have join with you. Okay. Mark, you're going to... Okay, we'll have you up. Why don't we get all situated, if I could just ask each of you to introduce yourselves for the record.
Chair Chair Smith and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Willis. I'm director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs.
Chair Smith, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paula Brown, and I'm the deputy director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs.
And Chair Smith, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mark Miedema. I am with the Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management Division.
Okay. Well, welcome to the three of you. How would you like to proceed forward? We have an hour and 45 minutes to get through a pretty busy agenda, and why don't we let you carry the schedule for now and share with us what you'd like us to know.
Yeah, I think in front of you have just kind of an overview of the budget, which I'll walk through here really briefly. The first slide just kind of lays out for you how the Veterans Department works in the economic, yes.
The committee we're looking at. This.
Okay. And then the second page there. You can see that from a total funds expenditure, the Veterans Department makes up 12% for this program area. When you look at general fund and lottery, they make up 2%. And then, as you know, in the governor's budget, we looked at the six principles. And on the next page there, number three, you'll note that the department fits into two of those principles, first being economic development with their loan program, and then the second, human resources, which covers the veteran services and the home. Then on the next chart there, number four, you'll see kind of in the pie laying out by fund type. And you see the other funds non-limited, which is the bond program administration, debt service, those kinds of things. And then other funds limitation, and then the $2.4 million of general fund, which less than one-half of 1% of their budget. So then on the next slide, again, just kind of giving you an overview here of the different program areas. Bond administration makes up 93% of the program, with the loan program being 3%, the veteran services 1%, and then the home up in the Dalles being the other 3%.
Terrific.
And then in terms of category, the next slide there, number six, shows you that debt service is 63%. 29% is the special payments, which includes those other types of loans made, property taxes paid, again, based upon administration. Personal services are 2% of their budget, and the SNS is 6%, and capital outlay, again, is statistically, I'll say, insignificant. And then as a final slide there, just to show you how, for the last few bienniums, the department expenditures have been laid out. You can see actuals there, 9901 and 0103, and then legislatively approved. And then the governor's recommended budget for the 05-07 period. And if there aren't any other questions, I'll turn it over to Director Willis for...
Any questions? Director Willis.
Thank you, Chair Smith and members of the committee. It is certainly our pleasure to appear before you today and talk about the important work of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. Our mission... Well, simple is very broad. We are the advocates for all veterans, their dependents, and survivors here in Oregon. And we are dedicated to providing quality programs and services to meet both their current and future needs. I'd like to touch on some of the department goals, if I may, and then I'll move on into the rest of the agency overview. We are dedicated, of course, as you saw from the presentation that Mark just gave you, to maintaining the fiscal integrity of our Veterans Home Loan Program. We also want to provide more Oregon veterans with the opportunity for home ownership, many times the very first home they've ever owned. We want to improve service delivery through the addition of additional business partners that can be of assistance in carrying out our programs. And, of course, improve the financial stability of Oregon's disabled population through both our claims representation and in finding employment opportunities along with the Department of Employment. We want to retain affordability for the care of the residents in the Oregon Veterans Home, and finally to increase veterans' awareness of all of our programs through numerous publications, radio spots, and other public appearances that the department makes around the state. The department's history actually began in the closing years of World War II. This body, in 1944, passed legislation that created the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, which just 60 years ago, 2 weeks ago, we celebrated our 60th anniversary, and we were originally established specifically to provide home loans to the returning veterans from World War II. I want to point out to the committee a little-known fact. In researching the history of this legislative body and service to veterans, the actual first veterans home loan program from this body occurred in 1921 for veterans of World War I. It established a finite amount of dollars. When those dollars were loaned to Oregon World War I veterans, the program was then phased out. So it's just an interesting fact of history that the end of World War II was not the first time that we had a home loan program in Oregon for veterans. In any event, our services to veterans and their dependents and families include one that you hear a great deal about, which is our Veterans Benefit Counseling and Claims Preparation. This is so that they can obtain educational aid and then, of course, any claim for service-connected disability or non-service-connected disabilities. It also provides survivor benefits for Oregon veterans and their dependents and survivors. We do that through our Salem Claims Office, through our Portland Claims Office, and then through our system of county veteran service officers and national service officers from five of the congressionally recognized service organizations. Those national service officers are stationed in Portland. The county veteran service officers are stationed in 34 counties of the state. We take care of Marion and Polk County, so we have those two counties taken care of. The State Veterans Home Loan Program, of course, I mentioned before, is a program that we spend a good deal of our time on. We are very interested in sustaining the program for the future, and later in my presentation I'll talk about why that may be at risk, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. We also are very proud of what Representative Nelson mentioned earlier in her presentation, of our Oregon Veterans Home, where we provide skilled nursing, rehabilitation, and Alzheimer and other dementia care in the home in the Dalles. Our challenge all along there is to make sure that we can keep the highest quality care for the people in the home and at the same time keep the cost affordable for the people who stay there.
Really quick, we have a question from Representative Richardson.
Yes.
Sure. Director Willis, what are the number of vets that are served in the vet's home?
Representative Richardson, Chair Smith, the current number today is 132. Maximum capacity of the home is 151. 25 of those beds are the Alzheimer or other dementia, and the rest of those beds are all skilled nursing.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, this seems like an opportune time to offer my high degree of appreciation for the work that Mr. Willis and his staff do at the Veterans Home. I've had the occasion to visit the facility a couple of times and, in conjunction with Mr. Willis and with ODOT, helped make sure that there was adequate signage on the road to make sure that veterans visiting the home were able to identify the exit that they should take. It is a magnificent facility that I think suffers severely from having people not know about it. It's one of the most immaculately clean facilities that I've been in interactions with the staff. I have found them to be extraordinarily caring and professional. It really is an asset for the state of Oregon, and just as the dilemma with the sign exemplifies the fact that it's not well known, ODOT hadn't provided signage because they didn't know that the home existed as a state facility. And as soon as Director Warner was made aware of it, immediately worked with Mr. Willis's department to make sure that there was adequate signage. But I think that tells the entire story of this undervalued asset that helps care for Oregon's veterans. And it's remarkable that with the magnificent sum of a dollar in general fund allocated by the legislature, appropriated by the legislature, that the agency has been able to build and operate this really very significant medical facility.
Yeah, I would encourage all members of the committee, if you haven't had an opportunity to go see this facility, to visit it. It's magnificent.
It's probably got the best view in the gorge.
That's hard to say. Mr. Chair, yeah. If I might say, please... you know, in the last legislature, that dollar was one of our bills, and I hate to tell you, the state had not paid it until we established the committee, and Colonel Brian Boquist paid that $1 that we owed the home. But what I want to particularly say is, what is incredible to me is that this home is in the black, and they have worked very hard, you know, on the financial management of this, and it is well managed. I can vouch for that.
Well, Chair Smith and Senator Johnson and Representative Nelson, thank you very much for those very kind comments, but I have to talk about the high-quality staff that's at the home every day. Those are the folks that are making this happen, and the volunteers who run the gift shop, those people who come in to visit. And I always caution people that if you're going up to visit the veterans who live in the home, put some time on your clock, because they have stories to tell you that are decades old, and they'll tell them again and again, and they love to have visitors. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that. I very much appreciate that. And we will continue to work as hard as we possibly can to keep that home at the top level in the nation. And just a fact, there are 117 state veterans homes in the United States today. Oregon has one. Interestingly enough, the state of Maine, which would fit inside Burns, has 6 state-run veterans homes. And I just find that amazing. But in any event, I just thought I'd let you know that picture there. Another program, as we transition from the veterans home, for persons in need that our department provides is our conservatorship program. This program began in 1965 as a guardianship program for those people who needed help with the day-to-day living activities and paying their bills and making sure their taxes were paid and those kinds of things. It's usually assigned to us through a court, and we have trust officers, assistant trust officers, and then a manager that runs the section. And they take very, very good care of these people who are not able to care for themselves. And I'm very proud of them.
I want to ask a question real quick. I want to digress back to the veterans home.
Sure.
I'm reading the write-up here. Tell me what distinguishes this veterans home from a traditional care facility. Obviously, veterans are eligible.
Right.
Tell me what else.
We only offer skilled nursing. We do not offer assisted living, which many of the other facilities, private care or nursing homes, are able to offer assisted living and then transition to skilled nursing, and unfortunately in some of the cases transition then into Alzheimer or other dementia care. So ours is only at that level. It is, as you've just said, only for veterans. But most recently, because of a decision we made concurrent with the United States Department of Veterans Affairs rules, we now admit spouses.
Sure.
And until just last year, that was not the case. So we have the spouse, the veteran, and then, of course, the parents who have lost all their children serving in the armed forces are also eligible for residency there. And those are rules that are not normal to a normal nursing home setting, private sector.
Let me flush through this just a little further.
Sure.
And then the primary source of revenue for the veterans home is the veteran's daily rate is $104 or $108, depending upon general or Alzheimer's care. And of that $104, it can be either Medicare or Medicaid reimbursed. And then also there's a U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs grant daily per diem payment of $59. So, Chair Nelson's kind of had the benefit of working through these.
Sure.
For some of us, it's been 2 years, and for others on here, it's a new experience. Does the Medicare reimbursement and the Medicaid reimbursement plus the per diem, does that traditionally cover that cost of $100?
Traditionally. And I'm glad you asked that question, because just until last year, there was a challenge to the fact that if you have a Medicaid or Medicare resident, that would you, should you in fact be eligible to receive the per diem? The position we took and the directors across the nation took was that the per diem was a grant. It did not go to the resident. It went to the state to operate the home. We were successful in the Congress in making that case, and as a result, we were able to keep the per diem. As I said before, and this is a good time to bring it up, unfortunately, in the 06 president's recommended budget, the per diem was cut entirely for all veterans' homes across the nation. Since that time, the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs and the House Committee on Veterans Affairs on both sides of the aisle have said that is not acceptable, and they've both promised a $293 million add-back to make sure that that doesn't get cut off. In some cases, that could close, literally close the home. In our case, it could put as many as 40 to 50 people out of the home.
Okay, let me flush through this just really quick. So then if I was going to be checking my father into the facility and he was told the rate was $104.50, would I, as I'm doing the math, would I be able to subtract off that $59, or is there an eligibility criteria? How does that $59.36 play in on the rate? Because that's going to the facility.
The $59.36 comes in for every type of resident without exception. In other words, it doesn't make any difference where their income is coming from. That $59 is a per capita income based on census count.
So then, again, I'm on page 24.
Okay.
As I look at the veterans' daily rate, if you were quoting me a rate, would you say that my rate was $45? I'm trying to figure out, do I subtract out that per diem from the daily rate?
Chair Smith, members of the committee, no. The $104.50 is actually the cost of care to the resident. That's what the resident pays. The per diem grant payment from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs to the department, the $59.36, is a grant to the department for providing care to veterans. It's paid on a per diem basis.
Okay.
So, no, the rate would be $104.50. You would not subtract the $59.36.
Okay, and I just want to make sure I'm perfectly clear. And part of the reason we're able to charge $104.50 is because we received that per diem rate, and that helps lower the cost down.
Exactly.
That is correct.
Okay. I apologize, committee. I just wanted to flush through. That's what I understood.
Oh, no. And Chair Smith, that's the most important thing, because when that was at risk, it had the chance to do a terrible impact on these rates for the residents. And in some cases, we have people who could not have paid that rate increase. So I'm very glad and grateful to the people in Washington, D.C. who did the right thing and made that decision.
Chair Smith, it may be very important also at this time, since we're talking about the per diem, to note that there is an effort underway that would possibly reduce this amount, or that it would set up categories, priority groups, so that there would be veterans in the veterans home who would not be considered not eligible for that, because the payment doesn't come to them, but they wouldn't fall into the category for which the home would receive the per diem. So there's actually some concern that the $59.36 could go away for some.
The one last question I'll have, and then we'll, short of other committee questions, we'll proceed forward. At some point, can you share with us how I'm trying to struggle with, if I was a veteran, why would I not want to be in here? How do we get that occupancy up to a maximum rate with a waiting list?
I could explain, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Chair Nelson.
One issue, of course, always is where's your family and where's your home?
Got it.
And, you know, so we have many veterans who are in other homes. In fact, I want to say Director Willis is a boa constrictor when it comes to removing them from anywhere near their home where they want to be close to their families. So I don't know if that's the word. A rattlesnake, maybe. You know, you don't touch those veterans. I mean, if they need to be close to their home, that's where they're going to be. So that's the issue.
Makes sense.
Which is good.
Why don't we proceed forward? I've slowed us up here.
Chair Smith, I just want to indicate to you why we were able to get that census up and why it's so important that we continue to work on it. I want to commend the State of Washington Department of Veterans Affairs for doing an intergovernmental agreement with us, which allowed our metro area veterans to go to Olympia, to their home, which is closer for their families, right up I-5. And then we take the people out of, like, Goldendale, Washington, right across the river, and they come down, and then their families can visit and so on. That has had a tremendous impact on the numbers that we have in our home, and it's so much better for the families. So one can argue all day long about the location of the home. I'm just happy we've got one. I wish we could have them more centrally located around the state in addition to the current home. But that's for another day and another time, and we'll work strategically to see that we can have that happen. I think I had finished up pretty much what I had to say about our conservatorship or guardianship services. I want to say something about the state education assistance. Currently, our state education assistance is based on World War II rates. You get $50 for full-time for a semester for going to college from the state education aid, or $35 for part-time semester, per semester. And those numbers are woefully low. And also, we currently are prohibited from giving that state education aid to a veteran if they are receiving the federal educational aid. In addition, it is required to have either a campaign or expeditionary medal in order to receive the education aid at all, under any circumstances. Thankfully, this body is looking at a number of bills this session that's going to change all three of those things. And the reason I bring it up in such detail, Chair and members of the committee, is because education is the key to employment, and that's the key to a stable state. So that little bit that we would invest through the bills that will be coming through the various committees is a long-term investment in the stability of this state and in long-term employment for these deserving veterans. So I just want to...
Again, just so I'm clear.
Yes, sir.
$50 per student per semester.
Per month.
Per month.
Per semester. Right. Per month, per semester. That's it.
When was the last time that was adjusted?
I believe World War II. And during that time...
No.
And that
terrible.
And at that time, that was a lot of money, you know, inflation-wise. But today, it's almost embarrassing when they come in to get their state education benefit to tell them what that benefit is.
Let me ask a follow-up question. What steps have been taken to try and increase that?
Well, Chair Smith, there is a bill before the body. And I'll see if I can articulate the three parts of it. First of all, it removes the barrier requiring that the veteran not draw the state benefit along with the federal. In other words, they're able then to concurrently draw both benefits if this bill were to pass. I believe it raises the benefit to $500 a month full-time and $350 a month part-time. And finally, it removes the requirement for the campaign or the expeditionary medal.
And how many folks would potentially benefit from this?
Well, if you just look at the returning veterans from Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, it'd be around 4,000 just immediately.
And we have right now we have 8,500 veterans going to school in this state.
How many?
8,500.
Thank you. Have you had any communications with the employment department or with?
Yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Chair. Many times. In fact, one of them is here with us today. One of the best.
Not today, but in the near future, I'd like to have a communication with you and the director of the employment department.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
I'll move on then. In the interest of time and so on. I want to speak to our statewide partnerships with the County Veteran Service Officers and the Veteran Service Organization officers, and I want to be very clear on what we have out there to serve our veterans. We have 17 full-time County Veteran Service Officers. There are 12 full-time assistants. This is statewide. And then there are 13 part-time County Veteran Service Officers. And then serving organizations such as the Paralyzed Veterans of America, the Disabled Veterans, the American Legion, the VFW, the Military Order of the Purple Heart, and AMVETS, there are another nine. So those folks, along with my Veterans Benefit Counselors, are the network across the state that takes the claims in from the veterans, their families, or survivors. And then we pass them through our Portland office, to the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, where the claim is then adjudicated or rated, and then a decision made with regard to what happens for the veteran. I just want to tell you how committed I think these folks are to what it is they do. I think Representative Nelson just did a very good job of, far better than I even can do, to tell you. But I know that they do this out of their own pocket on some occasions, especially the part-timers. I know that they never bill the county a dime for a lot of their miles. I know they do home visits that are never written up. And I just want to tell you, Oregon needs to be very proud of these young men and women who are out there doing this very difficult work for very little money. As a matter of fact, if these people did it for the money, I don't think anybody would be doing it. Yeah. So I feel very strongly about that.
So if I resided in Multnomah County, Clackamas County, Washington County, how would I find this person?
They're listed. You just have to look them up under your government pages in the phone book.
What's it say? If I looked it up, what would I look under?
Veteran Services. I'm sure they'd be listed. The other thing I should say, and I want to make sure I get my subscription numbers right, the Vets News is 72,000.
72,000?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We publish a bi-monthly newspaper that has the name and address of every single one of these people to 72,000 veteran families every 2 months. And that it gets passed along through to people. Also, the addresses and phone numbers are on our website. And a lot of people are very computer literate these days, so they find them in that way.
And Mr. Chair, if I could interrupt, in every every city, every little town, there is a veterans organization. Whether it's the AMVETS, American Legion, VFW, Paralyzed Victims, Veterans, and they continuously advocate for this county veteran service officer. I mean, this individual is the most important person to them locally, because that's the one who stays with you. Some of these claims take months and months and months to ever get through a system, and these people stay there consistently. So those organizations push this all the time. So we're fortunate to have all of those members, those veterans, talking about it.
Well, I've had Senator Johnson in meetings I've been with eloquently state that, you know, these are the eyes and ears for a lot of these folks, and I guess what I need to
hands
know
and
is
feet too.
Hands and feet.
And wheels.
And I can visualize how this works in my neck of the woods.
Right.
In Morrow County, it's pretty simple to know how I get a hold of my person. I'm trying to think, though, if I live in Hillsboro, how I know I'm going to be able to reach out to someone. And I guess I need assurance that this body's doing all it can to make sure folks aren't slipping through the cracks. Knowing, again, that those are the eyes, ears, hands, and feet.
Well, Chair Smith, I can simply tell you that, as an example, my department goes out as part of the home loan program and does home shows every year to push the home ownership by the part of the veterans. But when we do that, we also talk about veteran services, including listings of how to get hold of that veteran when we're doing the Medford show, as an example, or the one in Bend, or up in the metro area. And usually when we do metro, we talk about Columbia, Clackamas, Multnomah, Washington, and even Marion in that setting, so that, because we know we're going to touch people that are living all over that area. And it's so much easier if they can, like in Hillsboro, they can just go right downtown on 2nd Street there, and in, I believe it's called Senior and Veteran Services, they're all in one building, and they can walk right in and see a veteran service officer.
But, Mr. Chair, could I just
Chair Nelson.
Speak to this, because we have a lot of suppliers, and one being the Department of Defense, and we really pounded on them in our committee, because
We have some new benefits. And our 3670th left from Clackamas never knew that for the previous 90 days they could have been getting medical and dental benefits, you know, and the worst thing to do to get to Iraq and, you know, need a root canal. You wouldn't want one done there. So these people did not know this. So we really ask, why doesn't the Department of Defense do some service bulletins on television, you know, that everybody can see that says, you know, contact your local county service officer and your Department of Veteran, you know, benefits and military, because you may have benefits you're unaware of. So we've asked for that, and we'll continue to push so we can always continue to communicate more and more. And with individuals moving here, you know, we consistently have to bring them current. But I want to say that I think the veteran associations are doing an excellent job of telling people what we've got, because we're not a veteran. We may not be as in the network, I found out, as everybody else. They think I'm a little crazy when I ask stupid questions like this.
Senator Johnson.
No, thank you.
Chair Smith, if I may just close out on how we notify people. There's one other real important thing we do. We get the Department of Defense Form 214, the Notice of Discharge or Separation, on every Oregon veteran comes to our office. Okay, when we get those, we send them what's known as a welcome home packet. In that packet is a listing of all the service officers.
How do you... Here's my concern.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping when I'm 85 years old, I'm old and crotchety and grumpy, and I don't want any help. And yet, you know, I may need some assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And I may live in a large area. How do I know someone's reaching out to that person and saying, you know, this is still available to you?
It, especially in Eastern Oregon, where you are from and where I've spent a good deal of time, there's a network over there that I think works better than any information technology I've ever heard of. And that is, somebody hasn't seen somebody in a while in Malheur County. They go check on that person in a neighborly way that is lost in parts of the western part of the state, unfortunately. And then if it's that kind of issue, the next thing you know, as Representative Nelson said a moment ago, the local American Legion is saying, hey, somebody needs to take care of Joe. What's the best thing to do for him? And, oh, by the way, let's talk to our service officer there in Malheur County in Vail or over in Ontario.
Sure.
And we help many, I say we as a system, help many, many, many people, especially seniors, when they need that kind of help. And it's through those kind of networks. So we can hear about it through non-veteran sources, and often do. It could be the Grange. Okay. They will call us and say, hey, this person needs some help. And it's tough.
Senior Services, DHS. Okay.
That's right.
I mean, even though...
Maybe I just want you to know, when I use the term old and crotchety, I say that as a badge of honor. Senator Johnson.
Thank you.
For going.
Exhibit A in old and crotchety.
Oh, my.
It occurs to me, just listening to this exchange and thinking about a committee that the chair and I and others sat through this morning, talking, and it is just regrettable that it's the case, but now at a time when there are so many hucksters willing to prey on people who are vulnerable or in need, what an added sense of intensity your outreach takes on in terms of not allowing veterans, whether they're elderly veterans or just returning veterans, to fall prey to the number of scams that are out on the avenue. And it seems to me that in thinking about your outreach, not only conveying the message of available benefits, available help, available shock absorbers between the vet and the bureaucracy, how you also get the word out to veterans about the potential that, as detestable as this is, that at a time in their lives when maybe they need help, they might be victims. And I don't know if you have a response to that right now, or if that's part of your programmatic development or thinking about how you keep some of the clients you serve and the people that have served us all from falling prey to unscrupulous folks.
Chair Smith and Senator Johnson, obviously we've been highly concerned about that, especially with regard to our conservatorship clients, because they're even more vulnerable, as you can imagine. So we're very concerned with that group of folks. On occasion, we've done alerts in our Vet News bulletin that we send out. when we think something unscrupulous is happening or somebody's making an offering that isn't as good. In answer, though, to the senator's inquiry, can we do better? You bet. We can do better. And I think we can network better with DHS, certainly employment through their veterans representatives and others that deal with these very that very group of people. So I appreciate that, and believe me, we'll strategically do better as opposed to our, the tactical things that we're doing today.
Thank you.
Yeah. On page four in the agency overview, there is a department organizational chart. I'm pretty proud of the fact, having been in government for many years, I'm very proud of the fact that this is a pretty thin organization managerially with a lot of people doing the work. So we don't have a whole lot of chiefs here, but we've got some real hard-working people in the trenches. You thought I was going to say something else, but I didn't. So, in any event, I thought I was, too. I just want to say that that has been, in the 18 months I've been director, has been done by necessity. We must live within our means. I think this budget that we're presenting to you today shows that that's the way that we are headed. And so we're lean, we're efficient, contrary to, and with most respect, we are not rattlesnakes, but we are very intensely devoted to what it is we're doing. And at this point of my presentation, we would like to do a very brief performance measure overview, which I'd like to ask my Deputy Director, Paula Brown, to walk you through. If that would be permissible, Mr. Chair?
That would be perfect. What I would also ask is the committee take particular attention to this area, because this is one of the items we need to address as a committee. And so if you have any questions, let's deal with those now, and let's be able to move forward on this and get it off our plate. Senator Berger.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed going back to Mark's presentation in the pie chart about employment, and there's a 3% chart under the general fund. There's a 3% pie slice on the right-hand side on the general fund and lottery funds, and then in all funds there's a 32% employment. I think the reason that I'm asking about that specifically is today the governor had a press conference about extending the unemployment benefits, and one of the young men that was lifted up in that presentation was from right back from Afghanistan, and his job was gone. And so if I missed it, I apologize, but what are you doing for these people that are coming back, like this young man, and has no benefits? Now they're going to be extended, but are you helping him find placement, or is he going to other areas to find placement?
Chair Smith and Senator Berger, let me tell you that just yesterday morning we had yet another meeting on this issue, and the title of that was From Deployment to Employment. Mm-hmm. And so the Oregon Military Department, my good friends at the Oregon Employment Department, my agency, certainly the policy advisors to the governor, and the people that are working in the trenches in what's called the transition program, the Guard transition program, are then working with the employer support to employers, or no, I'm saying that it's ESGR, pardon the acronym, it's employer support to the Guard and Reserve. And so we're having just this Thursday a job fair. I think you mentioned that in your testimony, Representative Nelson. And what we're doing is we are communicating across this state with every veteran asset to that's available to us to encourage employers to hire the vet, and especially these recent returnees where we're seeing the unemployment level at 35% to 40%. It's very, very high, and of course it's reflective of Oregon. But I think we can do better, and I think we are going to do better. And finally, the thing I would tell you is that we're taking great care to find and recognize those employers across our state, all over our state, who have traditionally hired veterans. And we always call it giving people a hand up and not a hand out. And these people make good employees. Veterans are used to, you know, self-confidence. They're used to doing what they're told and being there on time and these kinds of things. So I believe that our effort, our continuing effort, is going to result in a much higher employment rate for these folks that are returning, not only from this theater of war, but those that are concluding their military career. And one of the programs that I'm working on now, in concurrence with the director in New Mexico, is a very successful entrepreneurial program that encourages them to start their own businesses and teaches them how to be successful in startup businesses, which is a tough time, especially the first 5 years, as many of you here know. So I hope that answers the question, Senator.
Mr. Chair.
Really quick, Senator Berger, one of the comments I made earlier is I want to have Dallas work with us on a meeting between these folks and the Employment Department talking about training issues, but I think it also could be had regarding employment, making sure that the Employment Department and these folks are very, very well coordinated, not just now, but when the gavel comes down. And I don't know if you'd be willing to join us in that meeting, but I really want to make sure we not. It's not only funding issues; it's also coordination issues. And I don't know if you'd like to join us,
Mr. Chairman. I was reminded today that it's a human issue. When the governor announced that the employment funds would be extended, the young man that had just come back from Afghanistan's eyes filled with tears.
Oh, sure.
So I don't think it was anything that he took in any light way whatsoever. Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Nelson.
I appreciate Senator Berger saying that. I have to tell you that I had already sponsored the bill for that, and it was already in our system, be heard on Friday, because we were already focused on these kids coming back. Sorry the governor didn't invite me to come up there today, but we had already looked after that increase. The difference was mine falls into place April 1st and his May 1st, so that's the difference. But we were looking after him, and I wanted to just mention, we've asked all senators and representatives to send out notices to all their chambers of commerce. I did that about 5 or 6 weeks ago, ask everyone to offer up jobs, if they could, to the military department here. And also at 4:30 on this Thursday, we'll be honoring all of those who've returned from the 162nd at the fairgrounds. Immediately following that, at the Anderson Center, there will be this job fair. Mm-hmm. And then following that, at about 8:30, it will be a job fair just for these last at-risk soldiers from Iraq. So I would just appreciate all y'all sending out notices to your districts saying, if you got jobs, let us know about it. We really appreciate it. But I also want to let you know that we're also working on various other issues like grants. We have additional grants. We have the SBA has grants for starting businesses for veterans. We're asking for additional assistance, for example. And we have several bills that we'll be getting to you on helping them in their employment.
What I'm going to ask is if Chair Nelson, if when we have this meeting, if you could come in,
I'll be happy to
perhaps guide us through that
to
process. Perfect. Why don't we move to performance
measures? All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead, Paul.
Chair Smith, members of the committee. The department has 10 key performance measures. Our 10 key performance measures gauge our progress toward achieving our agency goals. They support the agency's mission. They meet all 5 basic criteria specified by the performance measure guidelines. We have ambitious but realistic targets. You'll notice on some of the targets, we've provided some additional explanation because we needed to be realistic with what we could accomplish. They link to 3 Oregon benchmarks, number 36, the state general obligation bond rating, number 58, independent seniors, which is the percentage of seniors living independently, and 73, the percentage of households that are owner-occupied. 8 of our performance measures relate to 3 different programs, 4 of them to the home loan program, 2 to Veterans Services Program, and then 2 to the Veterans Home Program. We have 2 other performance measures that relate to all programs that have to do with increasing the awareness of our of our programs. We have one key performance measure as a placeholder for a customer service measure, and we expect to receive some guidelines from DAS. We're actually already working on that, but are certainly looking forward to DAS's guidelines as well. The Progress Board waived the department's review of performance measures this biennium. We had no request to modify. Our targets were found to be in good order, and we had no outstanding issues from the last biennium. Just to give you an idea, last biennium, we had provided our targets ahead of the deadline, incorporated some national comparisons, and the Progress Board actually had requested to use our measures as a training tool for other agencies. And then last but not least, the department received a nomination for the 2004 Most Noteworthy Performance Measure. It was a measure that was relating to our Veterans Services Division. And that would conclude my high-level overview of the performance measures, but would certainly be open to any questions.
Why don't we do this really quick, committee, because this is one of the action items we need to complete today. Why don't we just go through each of the performance measures one at a time? If there's an issue that we need to address, I would ask that you raise it now. Performance measure number one, delinquent account rates as a percentage of VAT for the private sector in Oregon.
It might be helpful for the committee if you would turn to the appendix. We've actually got the detail material. Okay. And that's on A2 is where you'll find the first performance measure. Kind of gives you a visual along with the data for that performance measure.
I was just informed that perhaps I should ask if the 06 target is satisfactory as well. And if it is, we can fill that in.
If the term's here, why?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I'm not sure I understand.
Dallas, why don't you help us here?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in the appendix is the department's performance measures, and it has their. It's in the blue binder, or the blue clear one, under the appendix, and it shows the performance measures, and it shows their target goals for each of the measures, and those. In your in the packet that we handed out yesterday was the summary of their performance measures, and it shows the 2007 target, but the committee is asked to take action on it or suggest a 2006 target, and the department has provided that. So I believe the question for the committee is if members are comfortable with the department's 2006 target for each of them, or prefer to have the department strive for a different target for 2006, and if the committee is comfortable with its 2007 target. So the target is more than just for the end of the biennium. There's one for the interim in the biennium. And one of the things that the committee is asked to, for purposes of the budget report, is to make recommendations on the targets for both 2006 and 2007.
The one question I have on number one is if you look at the trend in delinquent account ratios from 2000 to 2004, it declines each year, but then it's projected to substantially increase in 05, 06, and 07. Can you walk through the committee and why you see that upward trend?
Chair Smith, the reason we see that occurring is with the improving economy, we're expecting that the private sector delinquency rate would, let me make sure I get this going the right way here, we would expect that the private sector delinquency rate numbers would improve, and therefore we would not be as high of a percentage of.
That's a tricky performance measure.
Yeah.
The delinquent account rate as a percentage of that for the private sector in Oregon. So you're tied, tied to the private sector performance.
Yes, and if you take a look at the 2004 data, for example, the department's delinquency rate is 1.14, the private sector is 2.72, so that makes us about 41%, about 42%. So the way I look at it, for me in simple terms, is that our delinquency rate is less than half of that for the private sector. We would expect that those may come closer together, however, with improving economy.
Sandra Morris.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Is it possible that this performance measure could have negative unintended consequences? If your profile is substantially different than the average for the state, are we more restrictive and denying access in a way in order to achieve that goal? So it has a negative consequence for the participants in the plan or potential participants, because I could read this performance measure in a negative way rather than a positive way. It could be taken both ways. I would be curious as to how your underwriting standards may be more restrictive or different than the commercial sector.
Chair Smith, Senator Morris, we do follow Fannie Mae underwriting guidelines. So for those guidelines, we do use the same underwriting guidelines. There was a time when our delinquency rate was higher when we didn't have as stringent of underwriting guidelines. Is that what you're getting at, or maybe I'm missing something?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think you probably answered the question, but I just raised it not in a rhetorical sense, but in a very true sense. Are our underwriting standards more strict than the commercial sector?
I'm a lender. I see this as a kind of a silly ratio. If I were measuring this, it would be, you know, what is our delinquency rate, and then basically take the one down below and say, how does it compare to the rate down below? And I think that's what this is doing. It's just kind of awkward.
Chair Smith, I agree with you. We had some extensive conversation with the Progress Board on this one.
It's really bad.
Yeah, Representative Avakian.
Maybe what you could do for our purpose today is just tell us where you're trying to get to and how you plan on getting there. Because I have trouble gleaning the how you plan on getting there from this data, meaning the effectiveness of your underwriting and collection efforts. I don't know what that means.
Okay. Chair Smith, Representative Avakian. What we try to do, we focus, obviously we can't control the private sector delinquency rate. So what we do is we focus on ours. Our goal truly is to try to stay under, for our internal purposes and our delinquency rate, below 1.5. So when we're below 1.5, we have met our internal. Some of the things that we do, I think I have a document here, just one second.
While you're looking that up, I'm going to throw out a suggestion to the committee, because we're able to modify performance measures. What if we just change this to say ODVA delinquent loan accounts, measure delinquent loan accounts percentage, and compare it to the private sector? That's not what I meant.
Mr. Chair.
We're overthinking this.
Mr. Chair, not even compare it to the private sector, just track the delinquency rate.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
The comparison's an internal measure. It's not something that is needed.
Well, with Mr. Chair, which after you answer my question, I was going to get to that too, and why you've even give us the information as to the information on the private sector. Because if there is no good reason, and I agree completely with Senator Johnson, let's just delete it and look at yours, but you may have a reason behind it.
Chair Smith, Representative Avakian. Actually, what we tried to do when we started out, we were doing our delinquency rate. That's really what we're interested in. But there was some encouragement by the Progress Board that it's more meaningful if there is a measurement to some external or something to compare us to. Certainly, we don't have a problem with that kind of a change.
Well, and my issue would be I have no idea whether this is a fair comparator or not. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but I would need that information if I were to want it to stay in the performance measure. Mm-hmm. I'm still interested, too, though, in the specifics of what you plan on doing in the next biennium to achieve your goal, which I don't see.
Okay. Would the committee be opposed to just having it that you share with us your delinquency rate? your annual delinquency rate.
You have more delinquency?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, sorry, Chair Smith, are you asking if,
yes,
if the department would be fine? The department would be fine with doing that. We would be fine with doing that.
I mean,
absolutely.
To me, that seems like a simpler measure that this committee could get its arms around. You make X number of loans, and some percentage of that are delinquent.
Yeah. And actually,
Chair Smith, that's what we had before. And at the recommendation of the Progress Board, who I think felt like we had to be comparing it to something, we thought we were. We were comparing it to the number of loans we had and to a target that we'd already set at 1.5, which we knew was below the private sector, and if we could go back to doing it that way, we would be very pleased.
That would be my preference. I throw it to the committee.
Do it.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, could I just say one thing, please?
Yes, Chair Nelson.
I just want to say that this 74.4 and 75 and 75 is very, to me, that is bad. You know, that says you're 75% of, something that we don't even know what it is right now. So I don't know why we would set that. It's the reason I just wanted to say that's why I think this isn't good.
Okay. Chair Smith, Representative Ivaki, and Representative Nelson, I might...
Looks like you went up.
Okay.
I might go back just to finish answering your question. I believe you were asking some of the things that we do. Some of the things that we do is we try to work with our loan holders whenever possible to have a face-to-face meeting with them. What we find sometimes is they may be a veteran who, for very good reason, is having a difficult time making that loan payment. It may be that they have a disability that has increased and affected their ability to work. Sometimes it's that we're able to help them apply for benefits, veterans benefits to which they are entitled, that bring into them additional income that help them make their loan payment. So that's one of the things we do. We try to use the early intervention. Although it's in the loan program and in our collections unit, they work very closely with our benefits counselors to make contact with those borrowers to see if there's some benefit we can help them get.
Let's move to performance measure two. ODVA outstanding loans that are non-performing assets as a percentage of that for the private sector in Oregon. Again, I think, committee, we need to modify that.
Chair Smith, I would agree with you in that this performance measure is very close to the first performance measure. What this measures is our over 90-day delinquencies and foreclosures, so it's kind of within the delinquency rate.
So how come we couldn't have just a comment on the aging of loans receivable not in excess of 90 days?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's do that.
Is that... I'm looking to you folks. Would that...
That would certainly be agreeable to us.
We're not jumping into a pit of anything. Okay. Let's go to three. Percentage of pre-Ullman bond refundings utilized. So this is the revolving part.
Pre-Ullman bond refundings can be very confusing. I've tried to get my hands on as many bond books as I can and read those, and I think the more I read, the more confusing it can be. But basically what this does is when we have an availability or an opportunity for pre-Ullman bond refundings, this says how much we did. For example, we did not do any pre-Ullman bond refundings in 2004, and that's the explanation for the zero.
Can you tell us the definition of what a refunding means?
That's a very difficult one, and I would be happy to bring up our chief financial officer, who's our bond expert, if that's agreeable to the committee.
This doesn't help us in our jobs at committee.
Representative Richardson offers a very, very valid point.
If it doesn't help us, then we ought to remove this from the legislative performance measures, because it's not, if they want it, that's an internal issue, but not a performance measure for this committee.
Senator Johnson.
I would tend to agree, and before we conclude with these, Senator Morris and I want to add our best practices measure. I think that in order for any of these performance measures to be useful to anybody, whether it's a legislative panel or the citizens of Oregon, respectfully, you shouldn't have to have a chief financial officer come and explain it. If it's not explicable on its face, why bother? And I would suggest dropping it. If they want to continue to track it internally because it's a measure that is useful to them for internal management, terrific. But you shouldn't have to bring your financial officer to understand what the measure does.
I think I get this question. This is the percentage of dollars that are revolved and being turned back around and sent back out. Loans made, dollars are brought in, new loans are made on those revolved dollars.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bruce Shriver, Chief Financial Officer, Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. What this is trying to show is that we have some very old debt that we can refund to make new loans available to our more recent veterans. And so this is a finite amount of money or debt that's coming due. And it's the only real source of funds we can lend out to our more recent veterans. So what this is showing is that of these old bonds that were coming due and are being that are available to be refunded, how many did you actually refund?
Why don't we do this? Why don't you take this and put it into a dollar terms and dollars available for the old program, dollars available for the new?
We don't need it.
Well, at some point someone may want to know what dollars go to what. And in terms of this question, I'm of the opinion, committee, 03 serves us no purpose.
I wouldn't even, Mr. Chair, respectfully, I wouldn't try to rehab it.
Let it go.
I would just let it go.
Mr. Chair, could I just ask?
Sure.
I think this does relate because we're in two different categories of veterans who can borrow, right?
Mr. Chairman.
Could you explain that to the group, please?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Chair Nelson, what we have, because of a quirk in the federal tax law,
this is important.
We, in essence, have two classes of veterans. We have veterans who served on active duty at some point prior to 1977, and for those veterans, there is a type of tax-exempt bond that you can issue to make loans to that group. Unfortunately, and they're called qualified veteran mortgage bonds, the only veterans that you can serve with those funds are people who served prior to 1977. Well, unfortunately, you have the Iraqi veterans, the Afghanistan veterans, Grenada. I mean, we've got a whole slew of them. We can't use those funds to make loans to those veterans. So this other group, the tax-exempt money that we can make available to them comes from this refunding of this very, very old debt that's coming due. And, you know, it's a finite amount, and when it's gone, it's gone. And so what we're trying to do, again, is make as much of this funding available, or to preserve this funding, to maximize it to the extent we can, to make those loans to our more recent veterans.
I would just encourage you, as you do financial presentations, just to separate out the money and say, this is the amount of money we have here, this is the amount of money we have there. And
okay, just for an FYI, Mr. Chairman, all the qualified veteran mortgage bond money has already been lent. The pre-Ullman money that's still available is about $10 million.
And if we don't do this, we're not going to have any money.
Got it. 04, percentage of loans originated outside of ODVA by approved mortgage lenders and brokers.
Okay. Chair Smith, could I just clarify on performance measure 3, was that a deletion of that performance measure?
Yeah.
Thank you.
And what we're going to ask you to do is any changes we have, just be prepared to come back during the interim to the audit committee and share with them the new performance measures.
Okay.
And I would strongly recommend we take it down to an eighth grade level, if you will, and make it workable for you folks and understandable for us.
We appreciate that consideration, Chair Smith.
Some of
performance measure 4 is the ODVA loans with outside originators. These are the percentage of our loans that are originated by our business partners, mortgage lenders, and brokers across the state.
Question?
Representative Richardson.
What is the significance to this committee of that percentage?
The significance of that, what we're attempting to demonstrate is that we are working with our business partners so that we are making loans available to veterans in their communities. so that they don't have to come to Salem in order to get a home loan. That's what the department is trying to demonstrate with this.
So is the target to increase that percentage amount?
If you take a look at our targets, yes, up to two-thirds. Once we get to two-thirds or 66.67, that's where we kind of level off and stay with that. That two-thirds, our goal is to that our market, our business partners would be originating two-thirds of the department's loans.
Please. Why not 80%? What would you limit it at two-thirds if it's beneficial to deal with local lending partners?
Well, this is actually our targets out to 2007, that by 2007 it would be two-thirds. It certainly may go beyond that.
Well, what I see is that for 2005, 2006, 2007, all have the same target. And so it's not like you're trending up. It looks like that's the level. And so I'm just wondering, what is the ultimate goal?
Chair Smith, Representative Richardson, actually what we try to do when we're having to go out that far is take a look at what we've been doing and try to set a goal that's ambitious for us. Because we hadn't reached the two-thirds, we kept it at that with the thought that when we come back next session, depending upon what our 2005 data is, that we would request a modification of our targets to make them more ambitious.
Okay, just one follow-up, one final one. Then the targets that you're listing here are not realistic, because it's not realistic to think that you could make the 2005 goal in you know this year, and then the next year you're not going to go up at all, and the year after that you're not going to go up at all. You're going to maintain. And so for it to be realistic, you would say, okay, we think we can do X percentage more in the next year, and then we can do X percentage more the following, if they were realistic goals rather than just numbers on a page.
I see. Chair Smith.
Can you share with the committee real quick, was there, I don't want to use the word pressure, was there someone behind having this put in? I'm not sure what it tells us. I understand what it tells us, but I'm not sure how it makes you folks more effective managers of veteran services.
Chair Smith, I think that I can't recall for sure where the suggestion came from, but we did receive a suggestion that it would be a good thing for the department to be able to demonstrate that we are utilizing our business partners. There was a time when the department did not enjoy a good relationship with mortgage lenders and brokers, and it may have been somebody who was a part of that era and felt that it would be good to demonstrate or provide that message that we do have a good relationship with mortgage lenders and brokers. In fact, they're our business partners and actually originate our loans.
Committee,
this is really their performance.
Leave it in, move on.
Well, what we need to know is what are they charging them?
The goals.
We'll leave that to you folks. We're going to leave it in, move on. What I would like to know, just from a legislative perspective for my district, I'd like to know just how many loans you have in each county of the state. I wish it was more sophisticated. That's what I come up with. 05, average disability compensation per Oregon veteran beneficiary as a percentage of that for the nation.
And what this does, performance measure number 5, Chair Smith, members of the committee, is compare the disability received by an Oregon veteran compared to the national average. So that, for example, 2003 data, 10,266, the average for that is $855. The national average, the 8,856, would be $738 per month. And what we're attempting to demonstrate is the effectiveness of our benefits counselors to obtain the disability compensations and the highest awards possible for our veterans.
Senator Johnson.
I think this is a great measure, and when I convened a veterans group in my district, I heard many, many stories of what the county service veterans officers in your department were able to do to maximize benefits. That's a good thing. On the other side of it are veterans with complaints that we cannot get resolved. And it might be a good thing for the legislature, and I'm just offering this for the consideration of my colleagues, to have some kind of a running tally of those that remain unsettled. For the veteran that's getting 114% compared to the nation, that's great. For the guy who cannot get help and is out there unassisted or without the benefits, that's a huge deal to him, and I think it's something that we need to keep track of to remind the policymakers that we have a lot of folks underserved.
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, let me understand what we'd be tracking there then. Is this an individual who has filed a claim and has not been resolved?
Yeah, open claims.
Open claims. Okay. That, yes, Chair Smith and Senator Johnson, we can track that. We have that data.
And I would hope that we would see a steady decline, particularly as the focus of this body has turned towards helping your agency and our vets.
That decline, if I may, Senator, generally occurs, and Chair Smith, as a result of the appeal process. And yes, until the last appeal is filed, we hang in with that veteran and try to get that claim taken care of.
What I'm going to suggest, if this would be okay with the committee, we approve Performance Measure 05 and then ask for an additional follow-up performance measure to Senator Johnson's question about open cases.
Open claims. Yeah.
Okay. Let's move to 06.
Okay.
Successful appeals of federal denials completed by ODVA staff as a percentage of that for all states.
Chair Smith, members of the committee, performance measure number 6 is actually one that the department would certainly entertain the thought of deleting. And the reason for that is because the appeals are not done the way they used to be. It used to be. There's a process change with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. When we began this measure, all of the appeals, whenever a claim was filed, we got the denial. We appealed the denial, and we had a percentage of approvals. Now the process has changed in that we file a claim. We actually have an opportunity when we have a denial to then, and these are actually only the ones that go to the Board of Veterans Appeals. We have an opportunity to interact with the decision review officers. Often those appeals are overturned before they ever get to the Board of Veterans Appeals. So now what we see is the claims that go to the Board of Veterans Appeals are those more difficult claims that have already failed in the first initial process of discussion with the decision review officer. So the department doesn't find this measure to be as useful as we believed it once to be.
Wouldn't this issue be addressed with Senator Johnson's earlier point on an open case?
I think that would be a much more appropriate measure.
I was going to mention the same thing, although it would also be good to know the time. You know, cases that are open and how long they're open, you know, if we have any control over that. I mean, what you're talking about here, we have no control over that. If it's an attorney who's being judged on how successful he is, that's a win ratio. But for you to be able to have a win ratio in this instance, it doesn't relate to the work that you're actually required to do or to that which is useful to us. So I agree that that ought to be taken out. We want to look at the things that you do have control over.
Right.
And, you know, how quickly are you working? What's your client satisfaction in the things you're doing? Those are things that help measure on the performance.
Is the committee okay with that? Okay. Let's move to 07. Percentage of average U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs pension and Social Security income needed for resident cost.
Chair Smith, members of the committee, this performance measure, if you take a look at the 1999 data, this performance measure was established so that we would take a look at the average Social Security and average U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs pension income and how much of that income was the resident required to pay for their cost of care at the Oregon Veterans Home. And as you can see, in 1999, it did not take all of that amount. With medical inflation outpacing the rate of increases to these income sources, as you can see, in 2003, it took 106%. Beyond that, it continues to get worse with 125% in 2004. So while the target in 2007 likely is realistic, 138%, the department at this point would entertain an idea for a different measure. We've already established we have been unable to keep it under 100%.
with the medical inflation has outpaced, has been even unpredictable to those who thought it would be soaring.
How do you take into consideration those folks with other private income?
Well, and that's actually what makes up that other the other portion of that. For example, Chair Smith, when you take a look at the veteran who's 125% of his income, what's happening there is he's using other assets, maybe family members are assisting him, a number of different things like that. Then what we do also is the department, when it became pretty apparent to us that the COLAs, the cost of living increases for their income sources, was not going to keep up with medical inflation, the department did seek Medicaid certification so that the home that was built for all veterans would continue to be for all veterans. So even those whose average Social Security and pension income was not going to be able to pay the cost of care, they would have the Medicaid option so that they could still go to the facility that was built for them.
What do you want to do, committee? I have no comment on this performance measure, but is this something that could be sharpened up between now and in the return back to the audit committee with those other performance measures?
We could certainly take a look at it and make some kind of a suggestion.
Okay.
Right.
And perhaps bring a performance measure based on that suggestion to replace this one?
Yes, we could do that, Chair Smith.
Well, these really are targets, they're projections.
Well, part of what we want here is workable tools for you folks and something for us to say, boy, they're doing a great job, and here's how we can show it.
And maybe, Chair Smith, with our placeholders, maybe that would be a measure that would be appropriate to replace this one, something that shows what the residents or the residents' families, what their input is or their response to the care that they're receiving.
And if we can make this a little more systematic so that way every 2 years when you folks come back, you have a pretty good idea of what we're going to be holding mm-hmm. not only you but all departments accountable for. Mm-hmm. And so I would really encourage you to try and work through those and simplify it for us and make it work for you. So. All right, let's move to 08.
Okay.
Veterans Home Trust Fund Balance.
Performance measure number 8 is simply a snapshot. It's a June 30th snapshot of what the balance is in the trust fund on June 30th.
I can understand this one.
Okay.
I like this one.
Are there any questions about this one?
Senator Johnson.
I guess the only thing that I'd like to track, and it's as much a sales tool as it is anything else, and that is, and I'm not necessarily suggesting this become part of the performance measures. I'm just offering it for consideration. And that's private investment in the veterans' home. I know that you have been occupied with other things and have been unable to fully tell the story that there is a mechanism for Oregonians to support veterans by their charitable contributions to the veterans' home. And on the few instances when I've engaged with you that you're trying to tell that story, I think you've told it effectively and with some good result. But a systematic way to measure Oregonians' participation in the home, I think, would have some value. Whether or not you build it into this measure or not is not as relevant to me as trying to institutionalize your reporting that to successive legislatures. Because I think the information is important, and it would give you an opportunity in front of microphones, and people are watching this all over the state through various means, it would give you a chance to remind Oregonians that there is a mechanism for charitable support of that very fine institution. And if they are moved to support veterans in some way but unsure how to do it, write a check to the home. And I think tracking the charitable contributions not only reminds Oregonians, but it gives you a vehicle to come back to the legislature and say this is of sufficient importance that Oregonians are voting with their checkbooks, and we use it as a demonstration to you for your continued public support.
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, that's a very good suggestion. We appreciate that. We do have those numbers available, and it would make very good sense, I agree with you, to track that to be able to help tell that story. So I thank you for that suggestion.
I'm going to go to Representative Richardson, then I'm going to start moving us along a little quicker.
Yeah, I think that there's an issue, and that is the money that goes to the home. You know, we've talked about a $56 a day contribution for the federal government, $104 a day versus $108. If you take the amount of money in the budget for veterans, for the veterans' home, and divide it by the number of vets that are there, it comes out at $204 a day, and you know, $74,582 per patient per year, based on the actual number that are there right now. And so there's still always an issue as to, is the money being efficiently spent? How does it compare with what's being spent in other veterans' homes in other states? Because merely raising the money and having a wonderful facility is only part of the equation. The other part is to make sure that it's being efficiently run as well.
Let's move to the next performance measures really quick. Number of vets news distributed.
Number nine is the number of department newsletters that are distributed. What we're trying to demonstrate here is the effectiveness of our efforts to distribute information to veterans to make sure that they have the information about their benefits. And one of the ways we do that is by measuring the number of department newsletters. There's a number of...
Is there a way to do some type of analysis where you look at the number of vets versus the number of vets contacted and finding out what's the difference? That, and that goes back to my earlier question, making sure we're not slipping through the cracks.
Right.
Mr. Chair,
I don't know how you do that.
Mr. Chair.
I recommend that this is not useful to the committee. This is an internal audit issue with the subscription... number of subscribers, number of newsletters they send out does not really affect this committee and our dealing with their...
Mr. Chair?
Chair Nelson.
I'm not sure that y'all are aware, so I'll just explain to you. Every month we have this meeting, and it's the County Service Veteran Officer, Department of Veteran Affairs, Department of Health and Human Services, the Military Department, the Legislature, and members of the committee, and I can't remember who else. But anyway, we just had our one last Thursday night. And what we worked on is accountability and responsibilities of the County Service Veteran Officers. There are none. And so if we are going to, none, I guess, in statute, I should say, or administrative rule. So in order for us to fund those positions, we feel we had to, you know, we felt we had to have accountability with responsibility. So one of the requirements there is to identify the number of clients contacted per month per any of the means of communication. And we do this for a purpose, and everyone agreed last week to do this, whether it's by internet, by phone, by walk-ins, visits to their homes, any type of communication so that we can account for the number. So that's what you were talking about. So we will have that for you in the future. How many clients have we contacted? What have been the issues? I mean, it's very important. And how have we worked through those issues? So here's what I tell you that.
Nope, that's excellent. That's really good to know. What I'm going to suggest is for 09 that we replace this with some type of ratio that can show the percentage of folks we just quite aren't reaching. Okay, we know we have this many vets. We know we have the ability to contact this number of them. The difference. I mean, no matter how good you folks are, there's got to be slippage in the cracks. And then I think going to Senator Nelson or Representative Nelson's question, if we could just look at some type of performance measure on. Well, I don't want to do that. That's going to create work. Unnecessary work if you do monthly contact.
I was going to say we're going to have it anyway, so we have it for you. You can tell how many we're serving and what the issues are.
Yeah. Why don't we have you folks develop some type of contact ratio and come back to the audit committee? And you know best how to to deal with this.
Chair Smith, I believe the performance measure number 10 will probably fall into that same category and could be replaced. Both of those measures could be replaced with something that we bring back as a suggestion.
Perfect.
And that concludes our performance measures, unless anybody has any other questions.
I would ask that you bring those to the audit committee, and then I'm going to ask that, because it will be during the interim, that you send each of the members on this committee a copy of those in addition to Chair Nelson.
Okay.
So,
Senator
Johnson.
Mr. Chair, in consultation with my good friend and colleague, Senator Morris, we would like to offer for the committee's consideration and hopefully their adoption the best practices measure that we are hoping to insert in the budgets that pass across our scrutiny. And that would be, I believe you have an advisory board, do you not, Mr. Willis?
That is correct, Senator.
Are they policy or advisory?
Advisory.
Okay. That notwithstanding, and not making the distinction between policy and advisory, we're interested in seeing that there is a high degree of engagement between boards and commissions and the governed agencies. And we want the board to be part of a continuous improvement process. And to that end, we would like to have you work with LFO to draft a performance measure that would indicate that at least quarterly your financial statements had been reviewed and approved, that at least that your commission or your board had approved the agency's legislative packages, if there are any, including policy options, that at least quarterly the board had reviewed the agency's performance measures, that the board had done an annual performance review of its executive director, that the board had demonstrated that it had received any audit information or management letters and had taken corrective action as recommended, to demonstrate that the board had engaged with its executive director in determining improvement in agency processes, including activities that reduce costs, improve the quality of the agency's services, shorten the time for accomplishing the agency's mission, or otherwise improve the way that the agency carried out its mission. And last, to ask that a governance letter, for lack of a better name, be submitted to the co-chairs of Ways and Means that certified that the board or commission had fulfilled all of the requirements. We're, Senator Morse and I are advancing this in legislation, but with the chair's permission and the panel's approval, we'd like to include this as a standardized best businesses practice performance measure in your performance measures as a way of beginning to institutionalize these kinds of best business practices in all of the agency budgets.
Chair Smith and Senator Johnson, in what you just recited, I heard one thing that we are not doing. So I welcome that.
One thing that you are not doing. Just for curiosity, what is that?
They don't review the performance measures in the way that you just described, but they do everything else, including our internal audit subcommittee.
Terrific. Who's the chair of our board right now?
The chair of our board is Evelyn Anderson from Roseburg, who is a retired county veteran service officer.
And I don't know whether you introduced other members of your board that might be here today.
Oh, they are here. Yes, I'd be happy to do that. Thank
Please
you.
Do.
Fulton Burns from Portland. Fulton. And I know I have more. Robert Haltner.
He just left.
Oh, did he?
Robert, he just left.
Got impatient. All right. Walter Cruz from Aurora. And
Sergeant.
Everybody knows this fellow, I hope. This is Starl Austin. He's a former director. He's a retired general. And he flew a P-47 in World War II.
Thank
Great
you.
Guy.
Thank you very much for coming nice down here. We appreciate your commitment to
for
this
deal.
Very important agency. Thank you. So we'll ask that you work with LFO on this new modified
sure.
performance measure. And if you think she's tough now, wait till those two become co-chairs. Okay, what I'm going to ask the committee to do now, because of time, is move to our priority ranking list. And Senator Berger, do you have a question?
I did have one quick question. I wondered if they might tell me what their connection is, if any, to the Disabled Veterans of America.
What, Chair Smith and Senator, your question was what is our
yes.
relationship
yes.
with the DAV?
Is there
the
any
DAV?
Connection between you and the National Organization of Disabled Veterans?
They are one of the three national veteran service organizations that we pass through dollars to for their service officer program in Portland. In addition, we have a member of the DAV on our advisory committee that the governor appoints. So one of those is a DAV member. And then we go to all the Oregon, not national, but Oregon DAV conferences and listen to the issues that are important to the disabled American veterans here in Oregon. And in Oregon today, there are 36,000 disabled American veterans of the 370,000 veterans. So that's a pretty good-sized number that are...
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Please.
So charitable contributions to Disabled Veterans of America does not benefit Disabled Veterans of Oregon. Is that correct?
I don't know the answer to that, Senator, because I don't know how they disseminate the money from the national level. But if this money is going truly going to the National Disabled American Veterans Organization at the national level, that's part of the state DAV, and then they do disbursements from the national level, then eventually it would come here.
I see.
But if I were going to contribute, and I was an Oregonian, I'd contribute that money in Oregon. That's just what I would do. I think then you know it stays here.
Here's what we're going to do, committee. We're down to 15 minutes. We need to go through our priority, overview of the budget request and also the priorities, and then we are going to need to go to a work session. What I'm going to ask is that we go through these, have the department go program unit by program unit. If we have any questions, let's ask those and see what we can do in 14 and a half minutes. So why don't we start with number one, debt service.
Chairman Smith, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Randy Basil. I'm the budget officer for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs.
Welcome.
And as you can see, debt service is the first one. That is the priority. I believe that was the direction we were given, that debt service would be the main priority.
You know, we appreciate that. Some of the departments didn't quite get that message. But thank you.
Secondly, we have the director's office, which sets policy and provides direction for the programs within the department. Third and fourth is our counseling and claims and our aid programs. We feel they are very important because they reach the largest number of veterans and help them, brings money into the state, lessens dependence upon social service programs.
Can you share with us really quick what type of partnership do you have with the Department of Human Service programs?
Chairman Smith, the main partnership we have with them is we are Medicaid certified. They do inspections of our facility in the Dalles.
Got it. Okay.
Pretty much it.
Okay, our next one is the loan services. They make loans to the veterans, provide service on those loans, collect payments, cashiering. Next is our loan limited payments. These pay the property taxes on the loans. They also provide, if we take one of the loans back, the property management services until we sell that loan again.
Who provides the property management services?
We actually do the majority of it, but we do contract out with people to mow lawns.
Perfect.
Those types of.
Okay.
Then there's our financial administration, track the bonding money, make payments. Our administrative services, which is actually our business office is contained within there. They're responsible for the upkeep on the buildings that we own, our data processing services.
Human resources.
Then we have the Veterans Home, which serves approximately 500 to 600 veterans per biennium. And then is our conservatorship program, which is currently serving 207 veterans.
Let me go to Representative Richardson.
I'd like to ask a couple questions. If you would go back to the veterans, the budget support, detailed revenue and expenditures sheets. I want to ask a couple questions about financial administration. So I'm skipping over to your detailed reports.
Oh, okay.
And I'm on page 11 of 26. In the very back of our blue binders.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Secretary, Mr. Chair.
11 of 26.
It's under support documents.
It's under support documents. It's the tab. It's the last tab in the blue binder.
Oh, right. Okay.
The big binder.
We're the big binder. We're there.
We're in the big binder.
It's page 11. It's the Veterans Service Budget Support.
Why don't we go with your question?
We heard you.
Okay, which page exactly?
11 of 26.
Okay.
And Veterans Service.
Dealing with. Got it?
Well, I'm hoping it's the right one. Yeah.
Is it Veterans Services Program at the top of the page?
This is the one, and it says Veterans Services Program, yes.
Oh, okay.
Got it? Under item 3270, it shows that for the estimate for the current biennium, that the cost for flexible benefits is $261,000, and the governor's recommended budget for the next biennium is $516,000, and so it's a 100% increase. So I'm wondering if you could explain why there would be that kind of an increase.
Support documents.
Minor number difference.
Representative Smith, Representative Richardson. That's actually a PICS driven.
Yes.
I would presume.
Why don't we have Dallas really quick?
Okay. I think Mark Medema and I can weigh in on this. This is because we transferred some of the activities from general fund to other fund. And so the benefits here, if you'll notice, there's a big decrease in the general fund portion of those benefits.
Yes.
It's offset by the increase in the other funds. This is because we've transferred funding from general fund to other funds in this area.
Except I'm looking at all funds. So I'm looking at the total, not the fund.
What is your question?
It's going up 100% in one biennium.
Where do you see that?
There's a number from 261 to 534.
To 516 is I'm looking not at their request, but the GRB, the governor's recommended budget.
Representative Smith, Representative Richardson. Actually, you'll see that there were 17 positions in there at the smaller amount, and there's 28 positions at the larger amount.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Yes,
the second question that I have is I'm not clear as to the increase, it's like a 60% increase in staffing between the biennium.
Okay, please. Chair Smith and Representative Richardson, I think what happened here is before we had people who were budgeted under the loan program, they were other funded, but they were working in veteran services. What we did in this budget was we took those persons who were in the loan fund but who were working in veteran services and moved other funding there, and we're budgeting those people where they're actually doing the work. So if we looked at the loan program, you would see a decrease, but we moved 9 people from the loan program to this veteran services. So you're just looking at a shift of people in the in the various programs, mm-hmm. but now they're where they do their work.
Just follow up. Can I ask a couple questions?
Of course.
So does that mean that there's no additional positions, merely a shifting in positions?
Correct. Right. It was 9 positions that moved out of the loan services position, loan services area, to the veteran services area.
Okay. While we're dealing with positions, I went back to the very back, the last couple pages of this, and looked at the, I think it's the PICS system report, and I see that there's 16 management for 113 people, or a ratio of about 1-6 managers to staff. I'm wondering if that is heavy, or is that not heavy?
Chair Smith and Representative Richardson, in our organization, we have some first-line people who carry caseload. In other words, they are almost a senior worker, but they're responsible for that unit or section of people. So it may throw off the ratio that you're talking about, because they aren't people that just sit in an office and read the statistics. There are people that actually take cases. They carry caseload in our veteran services. They carry caseload in our conservatorship program, and so on. And we actually had, previously to the layoffs that we had to do during this biennium, we actually had more managers than that. And I thought that the span of control issue, given the fiduciary responsibilities of many of these sections and the power of attorneys that our people take, was such that we needed more control as opposed to less control. So if anybody's responsible for making sure that that manager-to-employee ratio is as high as it looks there, it's me. And I felt it was necessary as long as we had people who were carrying caseload and helping to do the actual output through the door and seeing the veteran when they came in. And that's my best answer for that.
Okay, just a final comment is we would certainly assure or assume that the managers would be working and not merely, you know, sitting there kind of going through documents and graphs. It's just that there's, you know, there's cost consequences to it, and so we're constantly looking at those ratios because there's consequences.
Yes, sir. Financially. I understand.
Representative Smith, Representative Richardson, there are actually four of those positions that are non-supervisory, such as our internal auditor, the executive assistant to the director, our human resource person, and myself.
Thank you.
That are non-supervisory,
yes,
but
Senator
we are management.
Mr. Chairman, I'm prepared to, in looking at this, yeah, that maybe we could rank these, all of these from 1 to 3.
Why don't we do this? Why don't I close the public testimony? I'm going to ask Mr. Booker from the Oregon Employment Department to perhaps set up a time to work with Dallas and I and Senator Berger and Chair Nelson just to make sure that there's coordination between this department and you folks and make sure that we're doing a good job of ensuring that there's adequate outreach. With that, I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 5072, the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Mr. Chairman, in listening to all the wonderful accolades given by members of the committee and in prioritizing the direction of this agency, I would like to make a motion and for the members to think about it that we would prioritize their performance measures at 1 through 3. And they're prioritized. Yes,
okay. Senator Carter has made a motion. We need a second.
Second.
Okay. Senator Johnson seconds. All those in favor. Do we need a...
Can we have clarification? I think she's talking about prioritizing, going through the list and giving it a number.
Oh, you want to go through the list and give it...
No.
You're ready to move the
thing. I'm ready to move the bill, Mr.
Right.
Chairman. You guys have...
We're moving this.
Let's move.
These veterans can't wait.
Where are we now?
So we have a motion, we have a second to adopt the budget as presented by the department.
Prioritizing. Go, Dallas.
Dallas, why don't you take the lead on this?
Okay. I believe I may paraphrase.
You may.
You're moving that we their items are high priority for this committee.
That's right.
Thank you. So the priority list is ranked high by the committee. Next. Are you moving the LFO recommendation on the budget?
And I'm moving the LFO recommendation on the budget.
I'll briefly go through that. Legislative Fiscal is recommending a couple of minor changes. There's a reduction in the PERS rate, so we're recommending a reduction in the general fund of $7,745 and other funds of $76,180, strictly to reflect the reduced PERS contribution rate. The other adjustment would be to move $25,000 of non-limited expenditures, which is in their budget request, to expenditure limitation. And this is consistent with the budget bill. Those are the only two adjustments we have in our recommendation. We have reviewed these with the department, and the department is nodding their heads that they're comfortable with that. And I would also accept further direction from the committee to include in the budget report the discussion on the performance measures and where the committee was heading with those.
And I think that's where Senator Carter was going with her
motion.
That's
where I was going with the motion.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Westland.
I believe it's appropriate that the motioner be willing to accept a friendly motion. Friendly amendment to her motion.
Mm-hmm.
And then we vote on the amendment, and then we vote on the original motion.
I accept my colleague's friendly amendment, Mr. Chairman.
I move the LFO report be incorporated into the budget as presented by Dallas Wine.
Second. Are there any objections?
None.
So moved.
Now, I move the motion is presented by Senator Carter and amended by Senator Westland as recorded by Dallas Lyon to the floors with a due pass recommendation.
The bill be moved to full
with a due pass recommendation.
Any objections?
We need a carrier.
Yeah. Who would like to carry this for us to full Ways and Means?
I am.
Senator Carter? And then are we going to...
House and Senate.
House and Senate. Would you like to... Would the committee be okay with having Senator or Representative Nelson carry this? Are we able to do that?
Sure. Yeah.
I don't think so.
Is there a reason why we couldn't do that, Dallas?
No, you can do that.
You can do that.
You can?
Representative Nelson, we're going to ask you to carry this.
Well, I'd be honored.
And,
all right. Thank you.
Senator Johnson on the Senate side.
Well, thank you.
And, Dallas, I appreciate you holding my hand through this first bill that we've moved forward. And I want to thank you folks for coming today and presenting a very, very good budget to us. We appreciate your leadership. We appreciate the governor bringing forward a budget. We do look forward to working with you here in the coming weeks as we try and increase these linkages with other potential sources of assistance for our veterans. And with that, without any objection, I'm going to adjourn for the day.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.